Hello and welcome to the X's and O's with Greg Cosell. I'm Doug Farrow with the USA Today Sports Media Group, and the guy over there is Greg Cosell, back at NFL Films in Mount Laurel, New Jersey after a week at the Combine. And we're going a day early. We took a couple weeks off after the Super Bowl, and it's Super Tuesday because Greg's here. That's what we're calling that. And Greg, you and I were both in Indianapolis for the full week of the NFL Combine, the big car wash, my favorite week of the year. And before we get into some players whose drill times may have magnified their efforts on the field in the minds of NFL evaluators, how many combines have you been to?
What year did the Texans come into the league? Do you remember?
2002.
Then I think I started in 2000. So I've been every year since, except obviously there was no combine during the pandemic year, but right. Everyone since then, 2000.
So in this sense, you are a millennial.
Perhaps, yes, if you'd perhaps like to say that, yes.
Yeah, this is my 17th combine. I went for the first time in 2007. So I wanted to start, before we get into some, you know, players and what we do.
Sure.
Your combine experience is a little different. Like, yeah, I think you're on the field for most of the drills, right?
I can be, yeah. I mean, I don't go on the field for all of it, but I certainly go on the field for the quarterbacks and the receivers, yes.
Right. And then a lot of what you do during the week, and we don't want to reveal names or talk out of school or anything, but you're talking to coaches and coaches want to talk to you. And that's a thing for you. I think it's the most valuable part of it for you. You've told me.
I mean, obviously I enjoy the workouts, you know, it's always nice to see that, but the best part for me is just the conversations, both planned and off the cuff. As you know, being there, you know, you walk the halls of the convention center, you can see a coach and you can have an 8-minute conversation. That's phenomenal. But the key for me is to keep learning more football, to talk about what's going on in the league. You know, coaches, scouts, anybody that's involved in studying the game, and these guys know that I'm not a reporter. Like, I'm not, if I'm talking to a scout, and I met a scout this year who I hadn't known before, and we had a great conversation for an hour and a half about players in this draft. But, you know, they know that I'm not interested in what their draft board looks like. You know, I'm not looking for a scoop. I'm not a reporter. I just love talking ball and learning more and more. And then it helps me tremendously when I come back and watch tape, because you just then see things differently. You hear things differently when you talk to coaches. Sometimes a coach will say something to me and I'll know exactly what he's saying, but the way he says it just resonates differently than the way I was thinking about it. And then it helps me tremendously. So those kinds of conversations, when you talk about, let's say, trends in the league, or, you know, what teams are doing in certain situations, you know, why there's more, quarter structure, let's say, you know, things like that. And then I hear something and I go, oh, yeah, that's right. That makes perfect sense. And I kind of knew that, but yeah, you just said it in a way that, wow, that's really clear. You know, and I don't necessarily say that to the coach, but that's the way I hear it in my head. So yeah, I have a lot of those conversations and they're just priceless for me.
Yeah. I remember 2009, I think, Mike Smith was the head coach of the Falcons and just one of the nicest guys. And I was just a little tadpole and he stood there in the hallway. I think it was still back at the RCA Dome then. And we talked for about 15 minutes and he was the first guy, and everyone would say this now, where on defense, it's going to be less about schemes and more about matchups. And that was one of those instances where, yeah, you could see that coming, but the way he put it was like, oh yeah, it just kind of crystallized the whole thing.
Yeah. And you learn those kinds of things. And that's what's great, because that, I mean, look, I sit and basically I'm at the point in my career where I watch tape, both college, obviously NFL tape during the season, and I watch a lot of it in the summer as well when I have an opportunity to watch 5 or 6 games in a row of a team, whether offense or defense. And that's a lot different than watching it each week when I'm trying to watch, you know, 12, 13 games every single week. And I watch college as well in the summer for players who, let's say, will be in next year's draft. So this summer, I might watch 40, 50 players who will be in the 2025 draft. So I'm basically doing this 12 months out of the year. So, you know, I just want to keep learning as much as possible. I always feel like if you stop trying to learn, then you just stop. And that's what I try to do.
Well, we don't want to do that. So let's keep learning. And were there maybe a couple things you heard more and more from coaches where you and I are looking for philosophies and trends? And we talk about that a lot. Maybe a couple things you heard from coaches and scouts and GMs and whoever, where you think, okay, based on, you know, this number of people who have said this, I kind of think these things are where the NFL is going.
Well, you know, the one thing that's been talked about for a number of years, and obviously people talk about Vic Fangio and quarters coverage, but it's not so much quarters coverage as much as it is quarters structure to, at the beginning of a play. And, you know, you and I have spoken about this. A lot of people speak about it. But, you know, I had a great breakfast with a defensive coach that I've known for years in the league. And, you know, we talked about that. And just, again, the way he spoke about it just made me go, oh, yeah. Because one of the things he said, and I don't know if you've thought about it this way, it might seem totally obvious. Maybe people listening go, oh, yeah, that's really obvious. But you know what? There's a lot of things that are obvious and a lot of things that are not obvious. And sometimes they kind of merge. But, you know, he just said that, you know, one of the reasons you see a lot of quarter structure is because everything is capped. And, and you know, you just think about that for a second, because, you know, for years, everybody was playing cover three. We know that when the Seahawks going back, and you're very familiar living in the Seattle area with the Legion of Boom. And for years and years, everybody wanted to beat the Seahawks and play cover three. And then teams figured out how to attack cover three, you know, much better than they had prior. And also the Seahawks obviously had great personnel. And if you're going to play cover three, you need a post safety who's a big time player, because he's the guy that covers up for mistakes that you and I and the average person don't know that mistakes are made, but the coaches know. And right. We have Earl Thomas, mistakes get covered up. But the point is that teams started to figure out, just like going back years with Tony Dungy in cover two, teams start to figure out how to attack cover two. So
it also helps you have Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks and Rondae Barber.
Right. That's no, I mean, it always helps when you have really good players in any defense, obviously. But you know, just thinking about this coach telling me about, you know, everything is capped, it just made me think about the league in the fact that where has the league gone in the passing game of late? The league has gone more to RPOs, quick game. Even a team like the Dolphins, you know, everybody thinks Tyreek Hill, yes, they signed him, he can run vertically. And, of course, he'll get vertical plays throughout the year because he can run. But I remember thinking when they signed Tyreek Hill a year or so ago, I guess he's been there.
2 years?
2 years, right, yeah. You know, when they made the signing, I thought to myself, because it was Tua, not, you know, not a guy with a big gun, I thought to myself, you know what? Knowing Mike McDaniel, it's going to be a lot of motion and a lot of quick rhythm throws. And that's what it's turned out to be. But the point is, now if you cap everything, theoretically, even if a guy catches an 8-yard ball, you know, you have people in position to tackle him. Now, whether that happens, you know, now you're getting into people. But the point is, it's tactical. That's what I learned, the tactical stuff, the schematic stuff, because that's the way coaches coach. No question, it's matchups. No question. I remember talking to Chris Spielman when he was still doing games, and we had a great conversation on the phone, and I said, what's the first thing you look at when you prepare for a game? See, I'm a process guy, Doug. I always like the process. That's when I talk to coaches, that's what I try to understand, the process of how they do their job.
You're more into process than outcome. Right. We're fixated on outcome. Yeah,
which is why I'm not as interested in analytics as I am about process, because analytics tends to be more results-based, and then obviously you take the results and you try to apply them to process, but they're based on results. I like the process of doing it. So, you know, I remember I asked Chris Spielman, you know, what's the first thing you look at? And he said matchups, you know, and so obviously we know that matchups matter in the NFL. Of course they do, but you know, there's also a lot of schematics that are not built on one-on-one matchups. And that's what I find really fascinating.
Yep.
I'll give you one quick example.
Yeah,
when
sure.
I did the book with Jaws and David Plowd, former coworker here.
He was just in your office. Home,
who was just in my office, actually, saying hello because he doesn't work here anymore. I remember, you know, one of the chapters, as you know, was on the zone blitz and Dick LeBeau. And now Dick LeBeau did not create the zone blitz, but he's the guy who's the coach who's mostly thought of when you think zone blitz. And by the way, he'd be the first to tell you that he didn't create it, because Dick's that.
No, he did. He credited Bill Arnsparger and the Patriots for doing it in the early 60s and all that.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, he'll tell you that. But I remember talking to him, and I, you know, because again, process. And he said, well, you know, I think of the field in terms of quadrants, and I think how I'm going to defend quadrants. And, you know, he said, I don't necessarily explain it to the players that way, but that's the way I see it in my mind. And I found that, you know, that's the kind of stuff I find fascinating, because then if you think about it, you know, it really is interesting, because at the end of the day, football is a game of confined space. It might not seem that way relative to, let's say, basketball or hockey, where the space is much tighter, but it's still a confined space game. So it's really about numbers and spacing. That's really what the game is about. Now, sure, it's about matchups. You know, sometimes it's, hey, my guy's better than your guy, sure. But in terms of the schematics of the game, it's about numbers and spacing. You know, yeah, everybody would like to rush four because then you have seven in coverage. You can handle space better with seven, you know, in the pass game. If you can't get to the quarterback with four, you have to rush five. So you know what? Now you only have six in coverage and you can't handle the space the same way that you can with seven, you know. So these are the kinds of things, and my guess is a lot of people don't think about the game like that, fans I'm talking about, but this is the kind of stuff I love learning because this is how coaches think about it.
Sure. I remember when Spags did that, Steve Spagnuolo, who is obviously the guy right now and justifiably so, did that video with Baldy and I don't remember who else.
NFL. Jaws.
Jaws. Yeah. And he was talking about that a lot, breaking the field into quadrants. And not like he runs quarters all the time. And, you know, these things can be obvious, but you still have to execute them on the field. As Pete Townsend once wrote, the simple things you see are all complicated. And that's kind of...
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because when Spags was in here for that season, which now most people know about, you know, because he talked about it and, you know, and a lot of people have talked about it. But when he spent time with me in that season, he didn't work. I remember watching, you know, tape and you know, I think his last stop there was maybe New Orleans before. I can't remember, but it might have been. And I remember seeing, you know, footage and bring, you know, saying, hey, Spags, come here. I'd say, this is quarters, right? And he'd say, well, no, it's not really quarters. It looks like that, but the rules are different. And we didn't go over every rule, obviously. But I mean, that's the stuff I love learning because stuff looks like things. And, you know, sometimes it's not that. That's not the way it's taught or coached. And, you know, to me, that's what football is. You know, I grew up in Queens in New York, and my high school did not have a football team. So I played basketball and baseball. So when I got to, you know, NFL Films and we created the matchup show in 1984 and we got the coaching tape in 91, to me, that was the Rosetta Stone. That changed the whole world for me. And to me, it became an intellectual and academic exercise because having not played, I wasn't coached in, you know, you got to go knock his ass in the dirt. You know, I wasn't coached in football. So it became an intellectual and academic game. And that's the way I enjoy it the most, you know, because I'm curious about it. There's a curiosity about everything that they do. I can't tell you how many times it happens every day, Doug, and then we can get to players if you like, every day where I'm watching something and I just wish I had the bat phone to every coach and could just pick it up and say, what were you thinking right there? How did, you know, what was the process as to why you did that and how it mapped out? That's the way I see the game. You know, I don't care, you know, what their game plan is for Sunday, or I don't care what a team's draft board looks like. That's not the stuff that interests me.
No. Well, one thing I did at the combine this year, it was kind of like all 22 speed dating. I was going around the podiums asking, I think I asked 40 different guys at multiple positions, what was your best play in college, but your favorite play, the one you'd want to show to NFL teams, and draw it up for me. Tell me what your route was or tell me what the coverage was.
Yeah, that's a great, you know, that's a great question.
So I was then able to go back and look at the tape and go, oh, okay, I can see what Cooper DeJean was saying here. I could see what Adonai Mitchell was saying here. That stuff to me is like, okay, you can't always have the bat phone, but as much as I can. And I was just like jumping around like a little rabbit going, what's your favorite play? What's your favorite play? And then I can get that audio and transcribe it and then go back and look at the tape and match it up. And I learned just a ton from that this week because
there's
so many different ways to do it.
Of course. And you know, that's the great thing about football. There's so many, you know, different ways to do things and the way coaches coach. And there's no one way. You can be good 10 different ways in this league. You can win 10 different ways. And, you know, it's not a mathematical equation. It's not 2 and 2 equals 4. And everybody should be doing it the same way. So, you know, but that to me is just the fun of football. You know, when I said I don't want to know a game plan, sure, I would love to know how a game plan is put together and how they get to it. But obviously during a season, you're not going to know that, you know, you're not going to ask guys that. But no, I think that stuff to me is what's really fascinating about the game.
Yeah, I learned a ton. Well, let's get to some of these players, Greg. And what we're going to do here is as many as we can roll off, like the guys who really impressed in the drills or, you know, the 40 and the 3 cone and whatever. And then what does that mean? Like, what does it mean for their NFL futures? I have Penix and McCarthy here, but we're going to be doing like quarterback stuff later, and there are other guys I want to get to.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, we'll end up, you know, as the week continue, we get closer to the draft, probably looking at some specific positions, you know, the ones that are deemed the most important. So, yeah, we can probably leave quarterbacks out.
And you and I are both rushing to watch as much college tape as we possibly can because our NFL seasons are a little busy. So let's just go through as many of these guys as we can, and maybe this will be a two-parter. I don't know. But Jalen Wright, the running back from Tennessee, Colin Carter's explosiveness, 1,010 yards and 4 rushing touchdowns to just 136 carries, 7.4 yards per carry average, shows up on tape. He ranked second behind Isaac Garendo in the 40 with a 4:38.40, led the broad jump at 11.2. He had 34 explosive runs on those 136 carries, and he has so many plays in both gap and zone where he'll use quick vision and speed cuts to get to the open field, and then it's all about that acceleration. And it's with Jalen Wright, it's really impressive.
Yeah, and I did right. He's a back that I did, and I really liked him. And again, and I'm sure you think the same way, but when I watch guys, what I'm thinking about is how they'll be deployed in the league.
Sure.
You know, there's no back in my view of the ones I've done, and I've only done 3 or 4 up to this point. Obviously, there's always many backs, but my sense is there's not a back that would be seen as a Bijan Robinson in this draft. There may, in fact, not be a back drafted in the first round. We don't know
that. There might not be back drafted in the second round. Not that they're not good. It's just there's, you know, like the tackles and the receivers. It's so frickin' loaded.
Right. Right. You know, when I watched Wright, in many ways, I thought of him, and he's not as good as the player I'm about to mention, but now I'm thinking about deployment in the league. Because, again, that's what this is about, right, Doug? It's about how a guy – that's why we're watching this. That's why teams do this. You know, this is not in a vacuum of, oh, well, no, you know, we're trying to figure out what he is in the league.
Well, in so your scouting reports that you do, you always say the transition, and that's
– Yeah, yeah, and that's – you know, so to me – I thought of Jahmyr Gibbs when I watched Wright. And as I said, he's not Jahmyr Gibbs exactly in terms, you know, Gibbs is more gifted and more talented. But I think Wright can be deployed in a similar fashion. He's a weapon. He's an explosive player. He's a good receiver as well. You know, could he be a quote-unquote primary back? And by primary, I mean, could he carry the ball 150 times in a given offense? I don't know offhand how many times Jahmyr Gibbs carried the ball, and clearly he was part of a combination backfield with David Montgomery, and I think Wright can be deployed in a similar fashion.
150 touches, maybe.
Exactly. So, you know, and I think he's actually a good runner as well. I mean, just in terms – now, one thing you're going to hear from people, of course, and whether this – is valid or not, that's up to people, as he played in an offense that was true air raid. So you often had two stacks outside the numbers on each side, which what does that do? It creates a lighter box. So therefore, he's not running against the kinds of defenses that he will likely see in the NFL. And, you know, that's valid. I don't know if that speaks to his traits level, but that's valid. But I really think he's a very intriguing player for what he brings to the table in an NFL offense.
Yeah. Well, it's like watching quarterbacks. Well, he played in this system. I don't know. Okay, I can't speak to what his NFL coaching staff will do with him because I don't know who his NFL coaching staff is. And you taught me this years ago. You isolate the player. You try and take him out of the scheme as much as possible. What are his transferable traits?
Right.
As opposed to getting bogged down in, oh, he was playing in this crap system, so whatever.
Right. So – you know, I think that he fits in the league, where he's drafted, how he's deployed. You know, sometimes guys get deployed in ways that you and I might not think is the best way, which doesn't mean we're smarter than coaches. You know, look, everybody sees things differently. Smart, reasonable people can disagree on a lot of different things. So we'll see. But I mean, that's the way I saw him, that, you know, he could be part of a, you know, two-person backfield, and that he's an explosive weapon. I mean, you and I both remember when Jahmyr Gibbs was drafted, and a lot of people said, how could you draft a running back with the 12th pick in the draft? And I remember Brad Holmes, clear as if it was yesterday, thinking exactly the way I did. And he said in a press conference that he's not a running back, he's a weapon. It turned out to be true.
Speaking of weapons, two Texas receivers, and we'll start with the guy who didn't break the record in the 40. We'll get to him in a minute. Adonai Mitchell. He ran a 4.3 40 at 6.2 205, which isn't bad either. I mean, those Texas receivers, geez. Fast in a straight line, but what really stands out to me about him, Gregor, is speed cuts. He is very sudden in space with subtle movements to displace defenders, and he can cut at full speed.
Yeah.
You mentioned this to me a couple of years ago. I don't know if it was Jefferson from the Vikings. It may have been, where you brought up how very rare, but a few receivers can make those cuts and not lose anything. And he can do that. He can run full speed without losing a step. He had a 62-yard touchdown against Oklahoma State. And all these plays I mentioned we're going to put up in the video. Last season, an out and up, where he just shredded cornerback camps with the two speed moves, 10 and 15 yards upfield, and that was it for Smith. And good play, but it's very tough for corners to keep up with him, not just because of the straight line speed, but how he can use subtle and not so subtle movements. Some of those cuts are just obnoxious. And all of a sudden, he's 2 yards by you, and you're just like, what happened?
Yeah, I liked Mitchell's tape a lot. You know, he was a kid that played one season at Texas after transferring from Georgia and had a really good year. Did not play a lot at Georgia in 2022. He was hurt. So, you know, he sort of burst onto the scene. But you're correct about the kind of receiver that he is. He's much more of a speed cut route runner than a sink your hips, get in and out of breaks route runner. But I thought there were reps in which he showed a relatively refined sense of attacking corners. Yep. Getting them off their spot, showing some shake and quickness to create separation. He's a vertical dimension. You know, to me, he's got the physical and athletic traits to develop into a pretty big-time NFL receiver. Now you get into the kid, of course. You know, you and I don't know that. You know, is he willing to work? How hard is he willing to work? Where does he go? I think he certainly has the attributes to be a boundary X receiver in this league.
Yeah, I would want him out there more than the slot, per se.
Yeah, he can win one-on-one on the outside at all three levels. But I really like A.D. Mitchell a lot. And, you know, when he ran that 4.34 at the combine, that was impressive. But he plays fast on tape.
That's it.
And I think that's the key point.
That's the thing. And he plays fast in a way that's not just a straight line. It's not Ronaldo Nehemiah trying out for the 49ers. I mean, he's got some, you know, that shake and all that. It's really – his tape has been – one of the most fun for me to watch so far. So the other guy, Xavier Worthy. And as we say, Greg, fast guys run fast, and boy, did he ever, 4.21. Now, had some focus drops. His tape was a little weird sometimes, but the deep routes are ridiculous. He had a 44-yard touchdown on a deep over against Alabama's cover three. I'm sure you remember this play.
Sure.
And all he had to do to safety Caleb Downs would give him a quick fake to the right, like a half-step fake before heading left. And Downs is kind of like, oh, I got to stay with him. And he had a number of plays that I watched both before and after his 40. And, of course, you go back to the tape after something like that, where it's kind of – I'm not comparing him to Tyreek Hill. I'm saying with a receiver of that speed, if you make one little millisecond false step, you're done.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. I mean, obviously, I was in the dome. And when he ran the 4.21, I mean, everybody was excited. It was a great moment in time, you know, just one of those moments. But in the overall scheme of what Worthy is, it kind of meant nothing because he's fast. You know, it doesn't matter whether he would have run a 4.21 or a 4.29. He's fast.
Right.
And the tape tells you that he's fast. So, I mean, in that sense, it doesn't matter. It was just a really cool moment. I think that, you know, we know that he's got accelerating burst and speed. He can run by people. I mean, I remember before the combine, I typed that he's a high-end vertical separator. I mean, that's what he is.
Yep.
You know, we all probably thought, including myself, that he would certainly run under 4.4. You know, no one knew he'd run a 4.21 because it's the best ever. But, you know, the other thing to remember is 4.21 doesn't automatically mean you're a great NFL receiver. Yep. I mean, was it John Ross who ran a 4.22? And who else? There was another guy who ran really well. I can't remember his name. And neither one of those guys really turned out to be a quality NFL receiver. So, you know, I'm not saying that that's going to happen to Worthy. All I'm saying is that specific time doesn't really mean anything in the overall scheme of things because we knew he was fast.
Right. Well, I put those two guys together because I think A.D. Mitchell, I think with his time, and then you go back and watch his tape, and it's like, maybe he was a little slept on. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, none of it. Yeah, Doug, as you know.
You watch that, and then you see the speed.
At this point, everything is being done, and I'm saying this honestly, by people like you and I and others. Now, you know, some other people don't watch tape. You and I are fortunate that we watch tape, and a lot of other writers and so on, they're not watching tape. They don't have access. So whatever anybody says right now, and I say this honestly, is truly meaningless. Right. Because when people say so-and-so is rising up the draft board, based on what?
Well, he's rising up. If you're saying that he's rising up your draft board, the team has had him on there, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, when you said, people are sleeping on A.D. Mitchell. No, they're not. Now that coaches are watching all these guys, they'll decide what they are. So nobody's sleeping on them. They'll decide, I spoke to a wide receiver coach that I talk to every year, and I wish I had more time with him, but I didn't. And he'd only seen 9 receivers at the time of the combine. So, and he's going to end up seeing 50 of them. But, by the time of the combine, he'd only seen 9, because don't forget about free agency. That's what a lot of these coaches are focused on right now. The legal tampering period starts on Monday, and so that's what a lot of coaches are focused on. So all these comments by writers or draft gurus and, whatever, which is why I don't do lists and I don't do that, because it's so meaningless, but it's fun, but it's meaningless. So when people say, people aren't, are sleeping on this guy or, oh boy, this guy might rise up the board. According to who? According to you. And you have nothing to do with it. Not you personally. I'm being rhetorical here. They have nothing to do with anything.
Yeah. I guess let me rephrase that. With a guy like Mitchell, maybe that 4-3-4, it plants a seed in your mind of the stuff you've already watched. Like, not like, oh God, I have to go run back and watch it, but it just,
I mean, I know a scout who works the Texas, that area. He's turned in his reports already. The team has the reports. They're not going to announce publicly, oh, here's the report by our guy, so they know what they, now there's more to do in the process. There's obviously visits to the facility. There's obviously pro days. We just had the combine. There's more things that are happening, but at the end of the day, the player on tape is done.
Yep. One more receiver, Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. And I got to, he was one of the guys who gave me his favorite play. It was really cool.
Which one did he give you?
I'll tell you in a minute. He ran a 4.39 40 at 6.12 20, which not bad at all. And he brought up the drag route against Mississippi State, which he took 76 yards for a touchdown. He said, I was just able to beat the defense. There were 4 defenders with great angles on me, and I was able to slip right past their man coverage. By the way, he also had a 75-yard touchdown against Mississippi State on a vertical route to the boundary. So 76-75, one was vertical, one was explosive. And both were explosive, but that, it's not just 50 yards downfield. He can do a lot of stuff. And all that shows up on tape. With him, I felt that he's one of those guys where the tape is good and the drills add a little bit of frosting that it just gives him a little extra.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy to watch because – very often guys with that body type, either, there's different guys. There's, an A.J. Brown, who's a great receiver. There's a Laviska Shenault, who didn't quite make it. There's that body type. You have to decide what you think. Now, let me ask you this. He's not quite as big, but did you see someone like a D.K. Metcalf when you watched Xavier Leggett?
Not quite the physical dominance, but the height, weight, speed profile.
I mean, obviously he's 6'1", 223, and Metcalf 6'4", 228, but I'm talking about, stylistically.
I think stylistically he reminded me a bit more of Debo. I think.
Yeah, I thought that too.
As far as body type, I think A.J. Brown is pretty instructive.
Yeah.
More than DK.
Yeah, I mean, he's I'm really anxious to see how it plays out for him when he gets to the NFL. I think he's a really interesting guy when you project him to the next level. I mean, I think that there are some areas he can improve and there are some areas he can't because of his body structure. Because, just built like that, he's a little stiff and he's always going to be a little stiff than loose. But he can really run. He's big. He's physical. But that stiffness will limit his ability to change direction fluidly, which I think is one reason he's best running routes that are more straight line linear, like in breakers, overs, vertical routes. And obviously, if he catches a shallow cross and he has room, he can take it to the house because he can run.
Well, the thing that made me think of Debo, and this is why I loved asking these guys this question, was that he was so proud of a drag route and how he was specific about, there are 4 guys in good position on me, and I got them all. And so it wasn't like, oh, I ran this 50-yard deep over, and some receivers said that kind of thing to me. And
right.
rightly so. But I think of like the mentality of a Deebo Samuel, where he, if I asked Deebo that, he'd probably say, I took a drag route to the house and I did these four things.
Right, right.
So,
But, you know, there is a physical and competitive component to his game, which, you know, is also really, really important when he gets to the league.
Yeah, I liked him a lot. Offensive tackle Troy Fatanu, go Dogs. Hello up here in Seattle. Washington's left tackle did well in the drills on the field. I kept hearing from people I trust more and more, he just crushed it in the meeting rooms, like one of the best guys. And he allowed 2 sacks and 23 total pressures in an offense, Craig, where Michael Penix Jr. attempted, this is not a typo, 117 passes of 20 or more air yards. He ran a 501-40 with a 1.71 10-yard split at 6'4", 317. He had one block against Texas that I just loved. He faced edge Ethan Burke and tackled Tavondre Sweat on a switch where Burke faced up on him and then dropped into like mid-low coverage. And then Sweat replaced him. And Fatanu, with both those guys, he did, I think it's called like a SWAT move, where he just dropped their hands with his hands, both with quick swipes, negated both of them. That was a 77-yard pass from Penix to Jalen Polk. And, you know, it was like for him, you know, I watched the drills and I saw his 40 and the 10-yard split and then heard how much he crushed it. And, of course, he wasn't protecting Penix's blind side. Roger Rosengarten did that because Penix is a lefty. But what were your impressions of Fatanu?
Yeah, I really love Fatanu's tape. Yeah. He is really athletic. And you failed to mention one measurable that is really important. His arm length is 34.5.
There you
and
go.
That's really long arms. You know, it's interesting. Despite being 6'4", he's kind of more stout and compact in his build than long and rangy. Mm-hmm. And I did speak to some people that thought he might end up being a guard, but he's so athletic and he has such quick, light feet, really good balance. His hands, I love the way he uses his hands. I think they need some refinement in how he uses them, but I love the fact that he uses them. They're a major part of how he plays the position.
Well, we put up this play against Texas where we see him just swat the one guy and swat the other guy. Just and Tavondre Sweat, obviously, you know, big name, big guy. That's what he did. Just like boom, boom, you're out.
Yeah, no, he did that. He used that swipe move a lot where he just, you know, when guys would fall down. But he has a really high level pass protection combination of athletic movement, lateral quickness, power, hand usage. I really like him. I mean, he's one of my favorite offensive tackles in this draft. Maybe among my top two. Yeah, he's a fun guy to watch. Just his feet are so light and agile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a great player. Chop Robinson, edge from Penn State. When I watched Robinson pre-combine, I knew he had to do well in the drills because so much of his game is just pure speed off the snap and around. Performed well, 6'3", 254, ran the second fast 40 among edge defenders behind Dallas Turner. I think we don't need to discuss Dallas Turner. We know he's good. 1.54 10-yard split tied Turner's for the fastest. 10.8 broad jump tied with Houston Christian's Jalix Hunt for the best in class. And his 4.25 20-yard shuttle was bested only by Western Michigan's Marshawn Nealand, who has become one of my draft binkies for 2024. I can't wait to talk to you about him later. Robinson has some work to do with his upper body and his hands, but he's really tough to deal with when he's just turning the edge. My question for him, Greg, and to you, would be, what do you do in the NFL when tackles who know how to deal with that take away your fastball? He did have a really nice arm over inside move against Northwestern where he then chased the quarterback all the way to the sideline with that speed. So you start to see what there could be after a bit of more coaching. And I'll tell you, the guy I really found intriguing, and he's also in this class from Penn State, is Adiza Isaac. I don't know if you've watched him, but that dude is a twitched up ball of fury to the quarterback. But your thoughts on Chop Robinson and maybe why it's so important that he aced the drills?
Well, I think if you just watch him on tape, I watched him last summer with 6 games and I've watched him this year. And, you know, I never had a problem with him. I mean, most pass rushers in college need to, you know, sort of have a larger array of moves. Mm-hmm. So he certainly needs that. There's no question. But in terms of sudden, twitchy explosiveness off the edge, he may be the best guy in this draft.
Yep.
You know, and a lot of people who are not looking at tape will look at his sack total in college and say, oh, well, there's not a lot of production. Well, you got to watch the tape. There were so many plays in which he just beat tackles and didn't get a sack for any number of reasons. You know, there are times he probably needed to be a better finisher. There were other times the ball came out and he, you know, quick. But, you know, in some ways, they're totally different players. But in some ways, you could think of Danielle Hunter when he was at LSU. I think he had 4.5 sacks in his college career.
Yeah.
And obviously, we know he's become a big-time sacker in the league. But Chop Robinson is twitchy, explosive. Yes. I mean, he is so loose. He's so fluid. He's explosive off the ball. He generates speed and velocity in one step. Yep. He can bend. You know, one of the key things to me, if you're going to really challenge the edge as a pass rusher, which you want to be able to do, you want to be able to challenge the edge, is you have to be able to flatten your rush path when you get to the top of the arc. A lot of guys can challenge the edge.
Yeah, you call it the motorcycle lean.
Yeah, motorcycle lean, yeah. A lot of guys can challenge the edge, you know, the top of the arc, but they then can't flatten their rush path and they get just pushed beyond the quarterback. He can do that. He can flatten his rush path, and that is absolutely critical.
Yep. Couple more guys I want to get into. Trevondre Sweat weighed in at 366 in Indianapolis, defensive tackle. He said during the week that he played at 365 last season. He also wanted to run under 5. Sorry, that didn't happen. He wanted to run at 4.540, which would have changed football forever. He did run a 5.27. Robert Griffin III made the point that according to adjusted 40 time, that was like a 180-pound receiver running a 4.26, whatever that means. But the athleticism is there. He had a sack against TCU where he lined up at 3 tech, moved all the way from the guard's outside shoulder to the center's inside shoulder before getting to the quarterback quickly with a killer spin move. So, yeah, he's big. We know that. But there's some pretty interesting athleticism there for a big guy.
This guy grew on me. I mean, look, I saw him at the combine. I hadn't done him yet. And, you know, obviously he looks like a big fat guy because theoretically he is a big fat guy. Do you know that he came to Texas as a high school DN? And when he got to Texas, he was 6'3", 249.
Oh, my. I need to watch that tape.
This kid is one of the most fascinating prospects in the draft as far as I'm concerned because this guy is athletic now.
He is.
I mean, obviously he's massive. Obviously, he has space eater qualities. We know he's difficult to block one-on-one in the run game because he has confined space strength. He can control and displace. But he also has really good quickness. I mean, he made plays where you just saw quickness. I mean, I started to watch him and, you know, I got to tell you, I started to think of Dexter Lawrence. I started to think that if this guy could lose some weight, you know, he came in at 366. Lawrence is 340. I started to think that this guy is similar. This guy is very, very athletic.
And that's high praise because, in my opinion, Dexter Lawrence is like Dexter Lawrence and every other nose tackle, and every other nose tackle is way down here. He's one of one. So that's quite a compliment.
I mean, but I'm talking, you know, size and just athletic movement.
Sure.
He's somewhat similar. But, you know, when I initially started watching him, I couldn't get the fact that he weighed 366 out of my mind. And, you know, when I saw him in person, you know, obviously he is fat. But the boy, then you watch the tape and, boy, he's got balance. He's got body control. He could stop. He could redirect and confine space. He showed quickness, lateral agility, closing burst to be an effective pass rusher. I'm fascinated by this guy, and I'm really curious to see where he gets drafted.
Yep. And he was, by the way, right next to Byron Murphy, the second at Texas.
Oh, he's ridiculously good.
Yeah, that's a hell of an interior defense line. I'll tell you, the guy Sweat reminded me of is Sean Rogers a little bit.
Wow.
Go back a bit of a ways.
I can see that.
Yeah, where that he had that like Bill James peak value thing where for a couple of years it was like, oh, my God, how does that guy do that? So, yeah. Let's see. Two linebackers real quick. Edgerrin Cooper. And if you watch two plays at Texas A&M, you know he's fast. Just your thoughts on him. And also Peyton Wilson, who the injury history is a little weird, and I think it's going to drop him. But, boy, you watch this guy on tape, and he had 11 tackles for loss last year, 22 total pressures, 3 interceptions, 3 pass breakups. I know we're not an analytics video/pod here, but that kind of tells you all the stuff he does. So just your general thoughts to go out on both Cooper and Wilson.
Well, Cooper is a C-ball, get-ball linebacker.
Yep.
You know, he's got light, bouncy feet. He just plays fast. I mean, he sees it and gets it. He's got great, great play speed. Guys like that, everybody talks about how, you know, they're not good at key and diagnose. I don't know. Sometimes I thought he was, watching the tape. you know, he's
if I can break in, there was one play against a tackle for loss against Tennessee. You may have seen this where he just blew through the pocket and threw Dylan Sampson, the running back, a good 2 yards to the side. It was a bouncer toss, just threw him out of the club. So he can do that.
I mean, this guy goes from 0 to 60 in a heartbeat. You know, he's sudden, he's explosive, he's twitchy. He puts it into drive instantaneously. I mean, this guy truly has elite burst and speed. You know, in some ways, the player he reminded me of, I think he's a little twitchier, but the guy that I thought of when I was watching him was Shaq Leonard coming out of South Carolina State.
Okay.
So, you know, but I really, really like Cooper as just because he's so explosive. Peyton Wilson was a guy that obviously had a great combine. I was in the dome for his drills. He had a great combine. You know, he's long. He's athletic. You know, he's a height, weight, speed linebacker prospect. That's what he is. He's got size, length. He's got play speed and range. He's a run and chase player, you know, to maximize his play speed and range. I wouldn't say he's not as good as a static, stacked box defender tasked with taking on and playing off blocks.
No.
He didn't do that really well based on his 2023 tape.
No, he needs open space to do what he does.
Yeah, and he needs to keep himself clean. He showed a pretty instinctive feel for doing that. You know, and again, he played a lot of places at North Carolina State, but when he gets to an NFL team, he's going to line up as a stack backer. Mm-hmm. He's not going to play multiple positions early in his career. Whether he ever gets there, that remains to be seen. But, you know, when they start, you know, mini camp, OTAs, whatever, he's going to have to play one position, and he's going to be a stack backer.
Right. Yep. Interesting player. Well, Greg, good to be back with you after a couple weeks off after the Super Bowl. I'm sure we all took a couple of naps because now it's post-combine. And next week we're going to whipsaw right back into free agency. Good Lord, this never stops. But as always, my friend, great stuff. And we'll talk to you next Monday for our big free agency preview.
Thanks, Doug.